time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
All right, another year, another batch of fifth grade head cases.
Let's just get through it.
I hope everyone's met our class pets, Leonardo and Squirtle.
I'm not touching those things.
Don't they eat, sleep, and poo in the same place?
Hey, I poo where he sleeps. I feel a hunger,
it's a hunger. That lizard looks pretty old.
Anticipations run through me. Do I look old? Thank you. No animal wants to be locked up. I wasted my life.
This year, every student has to take home a class pet.
This is my shot.
Are you nuts?
So I go with these kids, then I escape, and then I really live. It's on. Ow! Mother of Godzilla!
What was that?
You just spoke! Mom!
No! People can't know!
Why are your hands wet?
They're naturally moist.
You're talking to them.
These kids are all benefiting from my 74 years of wisdom.
Everyone thinks I'm weird.
Kid, they don't even know you. Try doing this. Wait.
Leo!
First one? Usually it's in the front, but very nice. You're growing up.
No, no, no. It's my dad.
Eesh.
What is so special about this reptile?
He made me feel like I could do anything.
This is going to end badly.
This is a tough time, but these are the best years. Believe me.
This is incredible!
I looked out this morning and the sun was gone.
I don't know. I mean, in terms of bodily fluids and images, etc., it's just a case of, you know, dealing with a turtle who has to effectively cope with sounding like Fozzie Bear. I think he does sound like Fozzie Bear, very much so, and not anything else at all. It's an animated piece, so clearly with great animation, because Richard Fitzwilliams doesn't do animation, because there are only 168 hours in a week, after all, and he's too busy looking at Jessica Chastain. Not in a scary way, honestly. Let's go to Natasha Wanton and Leo, please.
Yes, well, you mentioned the bodily fluids, Alex, because I like to put a bit of a trigger warning on for you now, because I thought there were some scenes there that you might find questionable. But yes, so this is recently released on Netflix, so just at the end of November last year, and it is surprisingly a musical comedy. They seem to be doing a lot of musicals at the minute for all sorts of things. I'm not sure that the musical element of this particularly added much to what we got, but I'll sort of get to that as we go along. So this is directed by Robert Marionetti, and Adam Sandler's had a hand in sort of the writing of it, and he also voices one of the main characters alongside Bill Burr, Cecily Strong, and Jason Alexander. So it's was one of those movies that I started watching it not knowing really what to expect. I feel like the advertising for this movie had done a really good job of not sort of giving the game away too much leading up to the movie. So it centers around a fifth grade classroom, and it's two very interesting school pets. You've got a Tuatara lizard. His name is Leo, to his friends, only to his friends. And then you have Squirtle, the Florida box turtle. Now, both of them have sort of been around a bit. They're getting on, and they're not particularly enthused about having another year of class. They've seen it all before. And during a particular confronting parent-teacher conference, poor Leo unfortunately sort of comes to the conclusion that he's only got less than a year to live. So he works out that he's 74. And apparently, according to one of the parents he overhears, apparently his lifespan is 75 years of age. So he suddenly starts to go on a bit of a midlife crisis. Now, in his dream, how he figures he's going to live this out is to escape to the Everglades. And how is he going to do it? Well, when they get a new rather battle axe of a substitute teacher who comes to take over from their pregnant teacher, and she decides that the children need to engage in their responsibility by taking him home, he sees an opportunity. But what happens when one of the students overhears him talking as he's trying to escape? This was a really interesting movie. It didn't go where I thought it was going to go. I wasn't expecting some of the plot points. I spent a while sort of working through this, trying to work out who I thought the target audience for this was. And it's definitely sort of older children, sort of in that maybe, yeah. Yes, it's set with 11-year-old cast, but I think it's meant to be, certainly a lot of the jokes might go over certain people's heads. There's a lot of references. And
well, the hairy back, for instance. I mean, the hairy back in puberty, that's not going to work, really, is it really? I mean, you need to be over 50 to appreciate that.
Yeah, there's definitely jokes sort of aged at different levels and different ages. I would say that this is definitely a coming of age novel, but it's kind of twofold. I know Richard loves the coming of age, movies.
Especially animated ones with lizards and turtles.
But this one is, yeah, it's definitely, you've got elements of it where it's that sort of, okay, moving up to your next school as you're getting older, sort of 11 years old, moving on to your next age of school, that sort of coming of age. And there's actually, I guess, some good advice in there. But then there's also definitely an acceptance of sort of gracing your grayer years and embracing that wisdom that you've sort of gathered along the way as well. And that's definitely a message in there. The plot at times kind of holds a little bit like a colander. There are some holes and some times we get from A to B, and I'm sort of like, oh, that just happened. Why? but it's a fun process in getting from A to B if it doesn't always make the soundest sense. I wasn't sure what I was going to make. I thought this was going to be quite a middle of the road movie. I would probably give it a 7 just because I actually really did end up enjoying it quite a lot, but it is by no means a perfect movie, but I think it's definitely fun. And the messages are actually, if you dig down a bit under all of the breaking of the fourth wall and all of the weird sort of Easter eggs of humor, it is actually quite a sweet kind of message. It's done seemingly very well in its reception. It's sort of got 82% of critic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's sitting at about a 6.6 average on Rotten Tomatoes in general. I think it's actually pretty for a movie, standard animated movie at the minute, because there have been some awful ones coming out across the board. This one actually, I think, is pretty good. I'm not raving about it like I did Nimona. That was my 10. But no, this one I'm going to give a 7. I thought the voice acting was pretty sweet as well. I like the voice acting.
So it wasn't a case of turtle soup and you didn't quite like the taste of the things, did you? In terms of the overall thing. Just looking ahead to another piece we'll be talking about. Fia, is this one for you, or is it a case of, frankly, I could do without coming-of-age movies in an animated version, and if it's got Adam Sandler in it, it's a hard pass?
No, I love the story. I mean, who wouldn't imagine that their pet can speak? I mean, I would love to speak to my cat just to see what she really thinks of me, because you never really know. I have a cat here, and I mean, sometimes she likes me, but sometimes she also doesn't. So I just really love to have a chat with her. So no, I love these type of movies, and I mean, coming of age films are always fun, and it's just a fun children movie. I would really enjoy it, so I'm going to watch it.
And Anna Koskinen, talking pets, does that float your boat, or is it a case of, well, cats are okay, but when it comes to turtles and lizards?
Well, first of all, cats are perfect, but this movie does sound really nice, and I actually like Adam Sandler, so I'll give it a go, even though lizards aren't quite my favorite, to be honest. But who doesn't like a 75-year-old lizard?
Hey, that's been said to me many a time, but still, let's carry on to another little line entirely. Natasha, do you think that he sounds a bit like Fozzie Bear in terms of the old thing? I mean, he was trying to channel Yoda, but I thought Fozzie Bear was coming out, or is that just me?
It also could have been that he just needed a bit of a throat lolly just to help his voice box out a bit. It was an interesting voice, but it grew on me. To start with, the first couple of lines I was sort of double taking, but then it got better.
Yeah. Well,
the singing did not.
No. Well, there we are. But it's got music in it. So I don't know, Richard, could you be persuaded to actually see Leo? Or is it a case of, no, my heart is always going to be with Jessica Chastain, unless, of course, I forget and the memory fades.
Thank you so much for coming out tonight.
Raise a glass and toast to all of you beautiful people.
Cheers, everyone!
Anna said there was a man outside. He followed me home from the Woodbury event.
Get away from the window. You all right?
It's amazing you didn't catch pneumonia.
Well, I haven't been sick in years.
You just got lost a minute ago.
No, I didn't get lost. Listen, I apologize if I made you feel uncomfortable the other night.
It's fine.
It's not fine.
My uncle talks about you a lot. My dad and I were maybe thinking you could care for him during the day. All you'd have to do is be there and go on walks and stuff. Why did you follow me home from the party? Or do you only remember when it's convenient?
I don't remember.
You don't know what you're doing. You're not able to make rational decisions right now.
Why did you leave?
Things were just getting complicated.
What do you mean?
Why did you and Mom stop talking?
When your mother was your age, I took this out of control.
Not with me.
I'm having a really hard time.
Hi, welcome back. The usual for you?
Oh, yeah.
What's the usual?
I don't know.
You know?
No.
Do you remember her?
No.
My heart is usually with the living, so to speak, as opposed to the animated. I mean, I think it's a very enthusiastic way that Natasha's described it, but I am resistant for reasons that have already been admitted.
Okay, well, maybe you'll forget that resistance. Maybe you'll actually sort of start reviewing animated movies if we keep saying, we'll go for your regular, we'll go with the favourite one, etc. Or shall we just go to memory? Or will we just forget about it and just carry on regardless?
Well, that's the thing with memory, because this was a film. I have to say that I don't normally give special ratings or mentions to PR companies. Sometimes the way a movie's been promoted, or there have been ups and downs or possibly strikes or whatever, and one mentions it. In this case, I would just give ARPR, I have to admit I hadn't heard of previously, a mention for the enthusiastic way they've promoted this. A movie, I have to say, that does have two very good performances, Jessica Chastain and Peter Sarsgaard, and it is a film that I was also looking forward to. I didn't see it on the big screen, but obviously the way our recollections shape our lives and impinge on the lives, obviously, of our nearest and dearest, it's an integral part of our being. But if you get dementia, that makes it all the more brutal, all the more cruel, and somebody, so to speak, becomes a very different, or can become a very different person. So there's a dramatic beginning to this movie when Saul, played by Peter Sarsgaard, follows Sylvia, played by Jessica Chastain, who's a single mother, she's a recovering alcoholic, follows her home, sleeps outside her front door. Obviously, she's very, very alarmed by this. We discover then that he's suffering from memory loss. She subsequently remembers that they attended the same school. She believes he participated in sexually abusing her. When he says he can't remember, she subsequently discovers it's her memory that's faulty. And as she's a social worker, she's offered a daytime job caring for him so they get to know each other well and a relationship begins between them. Then subsequently, Sylvia's daughter, Hannah, contacts Sylvia's mother, despite being forbidden to do this, and then we start to learn the truth about Sylvia's past and the backstory. Two very good actors in demanding roles, both of them perform well. I mean, this should have been something that I would have thought would have been a moving experience. Director Michel Franco, I think probably it's his fault because he does explore their lives with a certain sensitivity. But this is a movie that the pace is slow. Surprisingly, maybe it's usually or often too dark when you're looking at it visually. Very unsatisfactory. I fault the editing here. Scenes are jumpy, they're not well connected. So the story, which is undoubtedly unusual, it should rivet us, and I didn't feel as emotionally involved as I should have in the characters. We care, but the care is quite distant. So interesting, but I would suggest, despite the central performances, forgettable.
Wow. I mean, surely the choice of editing is meant to actually imprint on the notion of the way that memory can be faulty as well, as in Swiss cheese. Could that not have been a deliberate decision to actually address this, Richard?
Well, if it was, it didn't work.
So I'm suspecting a 5 out of 10 possibly for this.
You are right, absolutely right.
Fear, one for yourself, or is it a case of no, far too forgettable?
Well, I mean, it's a great joke, memory, forgettable, but
people are trying to forget about Siren as well these days. It's okay, we're trying to keep more right.
We cannot forget about Siren. Everyone who's listening, please
sign petition.
Exactly, please do.
Absolutely.
No, but I watched a trailer for this and I was just a bit confused about what this film was really about. So now that Richard has said it's quite a forgettable film, I'm really not sure if I will watch it. Because, I mean, Jessica Chastain is a very great actress. I mean, I also read that she performed very well in this film. But the storyline seems very complicated. I'm not really sure if it works. So I'm really not sure if I should watch it. Should I watch it, Richard?
Depends on your mood. If you feel you might respond better than I did, and from that point of view, I mean, they're two good performances. The dementia aspect of it is an interesting, possibly you could say informative look at this predicament, but I think it could have been much better done.
Okay, so I'm not sure if I will.
Anna, existential angst and forgetting and minds and jumpy editing and so on, does it appeal, or is it a case of, frankly, if I want to actually deal with the mind, I'll just rewatch the series of Chuck?
Well, it does seem a bit, I don't know what word, grime, the way it was described. And I think nowadays, especially with everything that's happening, we need happy movies and movies that will put us in a good mood, not movies. Probably not one for me, but maybe at some point I will give it a try, probably, but not now.
No, Natasha, not necessarily a feel good movie. A movie which may kind of lead you to ponder the meaning of life, maybe go back and watch Leo again and actually see, you know, what happens then when you're actually dealing with advice and seek advice from your pet. And obviously as a wonderful dog owner. And the name of your dog once again is?
Well, I've got Fuzzy and I've got Mochi.
Fuzzy and Mochi. Sounds good. Sounds like a possible TV series for Netflix. But anyway, on to this particular movie, one for yourself or one which you'll say, probably not.
Well, Richard said that the lighting in this movie was very dark. And to be honest, the whole sort of aura I'm getting from it is very dark. And I'm not sure, as Anna said, it's something I'm particularly wanting to vibe with at the moment. If the editing is dodgy, I can see myself getting frustrated as well. The script is the absolute nail in the coffin. So if the script is bad, I can't touch it. If the editing's bad, it will annoy me. It's just a case of how bad the bad editing is. But no, I don't think it's one that I will look to go to anytime soon. I will probably prioritize things a bit more fun, probably first.
Well, The Bear, of course, was a series which has won lots of awards with respect to cooking. Cooking has become clearly a very popular scenario in all sorts of ways. Does, of course, leave a bad taste in your mouth if you go away from a movie sort of not happy with the whole thing, and it's all about the cooking and so on. But maybe it's all about the cooking. Maybe it's all about Juliette Binoche, and maybe it's just because it's got a Binoche quote that you've decided, Richard, to say, yes, the taste of things clearly is important.
Well, the taste of things is—it's an absolute delight. It's directed by Tran Ang Hong, and I have to be honest—I hadn't seen his previous movies. I heard of the sense of Green Papaya, and it won him Best Director at Cannes. And you can see why. It's 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Set in the late 19th century. Now, this is a film for the senses. I mean, it is absolutely gloriously attuned if you like seeing, for example, scenes of cooking and something looks mouth-watering.
There's an awful lot of cooking in it, isn't there, Richard? It could almost be called Pavlov for the 21st century, basically, in terms of salivation.
Well, it's a romance based with food at its center between two chefs essentially, and their relationship is I thought very, very touchingly depicted. But it does play on the senses. Firstly, you see these glorious dishes being cooked. I mean, it reminds, taking back many years, Babette's Feast was a film which did this, and also The Age of Innocence, which showed the use of food was attuned to social status very, very impressively by the Martin Scorsese movie. Now here, it's set in a country estate in 1885. Eugénie, played by Juliette Binoche, works as a chef for Baudin, played by Benoît Magimel. He's a chef and a gourmand, and he absolutely loves her cooking. They cook together, and also there's a relationship between them. And she and her assistant, Violette, played by Galatea Bellugi, and her young niece, Pauline, played by Bonnie Chagnaud-Brouard, who's visiting, they prepare a meal for Baudin and his friends. And this is a group, they meet regularly, eat and enjoy food, that's their main pleasure in life, and they wish she'd dine with them, but she declines. One of the sub-themes in this is
She's poorly, Richard. She says there's nothing wrong, but she must be poorly.
No, you must be very, very careful about spoilers, which I've cautioned you in the past on this. It's a interesting when you see the relationship that they've built up, a long-term romantic relationship, but they have separate bedrooms. Are they married? No. Will they get married? That could be or not part of this plot. Certainly it's part of his plan. She's just declined him several times. But the love of preparing new recipes, well, there's also Pauline, what about her future? One of the sub-themes here is, of course, the position of women at that time and the fact it's a patriarchy. The film deals with this, I thought, in a sensitive and subtle way. Very often, it's very much the case that subjects, and I've just seen a movie, Wicked Little Letters, which was an example of this, that involve a patriarchal society, which we arguably are still in to some extent, but certainly were in before.
And then he cooks for her.
Absolutely so. But the thing is that has Pauline got a future as a chef? And also there's a prince who's invited them all for a very special meal. How could Baudin plan paying him back with what special French dishes? And there are, yes, indeed, there are health problems, but also there's a certain intimacy here. There's the romantic aspect of it. There's also the culinary aspect of it, but that's tied in with an absolutely delightful, this is what director Tran Anh Hung is doing, and that is making this a feast for the senses, because one of the things I was really impressed with this film, you get the sense of place. Sound is used very, very effectively.
It's just pots and pans, Richard. There's hardly a musical soundtrack there.
No, when they walk around the house, when you feel the dinners, when you see the way the sound accentuates this cornucopia of delights that this film opens up. And then visually,
Richard, when you watched it, did you have some popcorn in one hand and a hot dog in the other? That's what I need to know.
Vulgar suggestion, Alex, that is unworthy of you. And I will also say that visually it's glorious, but also you feel sometimes it's an impressionist painting come to light in a particular scene where there's a feast. No spoilers. It's absolutely gorgeous to look at. It's got a good script. Visually, it's a treat. And Juliette Binoche and Benoît Magimel as the lovers, they are both, I thought, excellent in their roles. There are those who might find it sentimental. If so, so what? This is a movie that comes off. It aims to be a visual tapestry of delights, and it produces them.
So sweet, sour, bitter, salty. I mean, presumably you're going to say sweet in 10 out of 10, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Food on screen. I mean, surely, so you have to watch it with at least a hot dog, preferably with mustard and onions. But that's how concessions work if you go to the cinema. Natasha, one for yourself?
The last movie I watched involving food was The Menu, and I'm actually still deeply scarred by that movie. But this sounds lovely. This sounds very sweet and very nice and completely different to that one. I definitely love a good bit of sound production, so I get what Richard's saying with that. Like when the sounds are like really crisp and really kind of satisfying, I do appreciate the editing work there and the sound technicians. Look, it seems really lovely. It seems really decadent, if I can pronounce properly. And as you said, it might be sentimental, but I feel like I'm kind of in the mood for sentimental at the minute. So I'm glad Rich has brought this to my attention because I wasn't aware of this movie before he did.
Although the audience, I'm sure, are well aware that when Juliet starts coughing and she says it's nothing, it really is. So
we really, really have to be careful.
Anna, what about yourself? A sentimental French movie about cooking. Is that one that you think, yeah, okay, what the hey?
Three of the most beautiful things in life, love, food, and French. What more can you wish for?
And you have, of course, engaged in a tasting with mindfulness when, of course, you've connected with our Cocoa Runners chocolate tasting live on air. So clearly you've had this experience of the savouring, not scoffing.
We should have a tasting like this next time at the radio with all of this food. I think it would be a great idea. And we can watch the movie while we eat the food.
Yeah, I mean, is this a movie, Richard? Well, I mean, because our cinemas now, I think Picture House have introduced things where you should, I mean, should you actually go and have the meal before you go and see the movie, or should it be afterwards, or should it be during?
I think it should be before or after, but if you're going to have all sorts of sounds and noises.
Would you like somebody crunching peanuts in the background, basically, or, you know, and popcorn and spitting it out? Would that help?
But they're quite literally, there was a stage where you had Cinerama and you had smells apparently and water coming over you. Yes. And you know, that floats your boat, Alex. It doesn't float mine.
I mean,
I think it would be such a... Oh, sorry, continue.
I was just going to say, surely this is a movie that screams, literally screams, for scratch and sniff tickets.
Imagine watching this movie with this amazing food and having those images with the food, and then you having your bucket of popcorn next to you. I think that's sad. That's simply sad. You just either eat something.
I have my 67-year-old pet turtle who thinks I'm 75, basically. So it would be well.
Yeah, true.
Fia. Is this one that you think, yes, I need to do this, but then again, it is French, and frankly, from the Netherlands, we've just got to keep separate as far as possible?
I mean, I cannot say anything about that, but no, I would love to. Can she just cook for us? I mean, wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, the way it was shot, the cooking, that was the best part of the movie, I think. I mean, I would just love to eat there. That's just my only thing. Yeah. And I just don't eat one thing about popcorn in the cinema. It just doesn't make any sense.
No.
Because if you watch a film, you don't want to hear crunchy sounds in the background. So why would you eat popcorn in the cinema?
And yet they sell it.
That's the only thing you eat there. But it just doesn't. It's not logical. Why would you eat popcorn in a cinema?
Yeah, I mean, think it's really interesting if you go and experience cinema in different countries as well with different cultures, because the experience you get, for example, in America is very different to the experience you get in Japan. In Japan, the cinemas are silent. Like I laughed at a joke and I was the only one laughing and it was like crickets. You do that in America and everyone's just stood shouting at the screen. So I think it's very, or at least in Texas they were. So I think it depends very much where you go and watch things. And it'd be interesting, same if I went to the Netherlands, it'd probably be a bit of a different experience to here. So I think the food etiquette around that's probably linked as well.
Yeah, we actually, in the Netherlands, it's very normal to have a break during the film.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great, especially with those very long films.
No, but that is very interesting because it's the Killers of the Flower Moon. In fact, there's been talk of actual lawsuits against cinemas that have decided to put an interval into it. There was a lot of trouble here because Scorsese intended the whole film to run without an interval.
And it's an endurance.
Well, the last interval that I can remember was in Gandhi, and that was in the 1980s. I mean, the Lord of the Rings with many of them.
Yeah, but Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and The Sound of Music had great intermissions in both cases. One was quite literally a cliffhanger as the car actually goes over the cliff. Anyway, Anna, viewing habits in Romanian cinema, are they more popcorn eaters? Or is it a case of, no, they go for the silent hot dog?
To be honest, I think that popcorn and everything in the cinema is so expensive in Romania that people just choose not to buy it.
Personally, I think that the long slurpy drink person is always very good to actually have a nice, particularly sort of apt moment is very effective. I can tell Richard obviously bonds on that basis. Let's talk about the British Museum, Richard, and the Legion exhibition.
Yes, it's very interesting, this, because very often when we think of the Roman, it's legions, and also the fact the Roman Empire covered such a huge part of the world's surface. I mean, we usually hear of the emperors. And
they didn't get to Australia, Richard, I'm just saying.
Well, that's a rumour, Alex, and I think you probably are correct. But in fact, what about life in the Roman army, which is, this is the exhibition is called Legion. It goes on till the 23rd of June. And it's also arranged with very useful guides for children, which I thought was very impressive. What happened, or how did the Romans build up their military machine that you saw, for example, in the opening sequences in Gladiator, so forceful, so effective? Quite literally, it was a machine of a sort. Males of noble birth were part-time soldiers automatically, but obviously most of the army were commoners, and this followed the life of a single legionary, Claudius Terentianus, and his enlistment to his retirement. And you follow several letters and the fact he couldn't join the legions to begin with as he wanted, so he joined the marine, which was a very, you tended to be involved not in fighting tasks, but say in various forms of building or lesser work. And you have to, you ask for your clothing from your parents and all of this. It's interesting. I didn't realize that the Roman, a lot of those in the military had quite literally to have their own arms and armor and so forth. I mean, sometimes a sword was passed from generation to generation. And there was a fascinating and tantalizing at the end of service aspect to this, and this was just masterly. You and your family qualified if the soldier, after 25 years or thereabouts, he'd served, you qualified for Roman citizenship. Now that was for you. That was for your
like the point system I have in Australia. Another connection, really.
It's pretty similar. Pretty grueling too.
Yes, it was
quarter of a
grueling.
century.
There's absolutely no doubt it was grueling. And one of the aspects of its, the grueling aspects of it, punishments, you had to be physically amazingly fit, marching very often at night, the camps that they built, and then the way the Legion fought with its shield walls and the way they used the legions and used the auxiliaries and used the cavalry and so forth. No question at all that the scale of military formation that fought in an orderly way, this was so important. The training, it was a very diverse army, obviously. The oath committed you to 25 years, and only medical discharge, retirement, or obviously death would alter that. And there was some interesting way that the Romans took parts from and adapted, say, standards and so forth from other cultures and so on. That comes across. Rome was the Roman Empire was tremendously diverse. What it wasn't was multicultural. It was monocultural because the Romans, they believed their culture was superior. And there's no question also that this was, if you'd seen Rome, the Trajan's Column, and how the Romans conquered, and what they tended to do, they'd defeat an enemy, they'd usually leave some sort of structure in place that had been there before. Then very frequently there was a revolt, and then they brutally suppress it. They were absolutely ruthless. And there also, this exhibition touches on the cavalry and the various benefits there. They had to keep their horses and so on, but cavalrymen, the spectacular display they were used, they were highly regarded. Then, of course, how standard bearers and centurions, there was a special cachet to those jobs, and how much
any
better...
Christians being executed, Richard, for kind of old time's sake?
Well, punishments were brutal and often.
Thank the Lord for Constantine, that's all I can say.
Well, it was very often a case. Locals did revolt, and the Romans were ruthless in suppressing revolt. But they had a vast empire. Yes, slavery was involved. There were certain emperors. We see emperors.
Can people take their children to see this, if they have any, to the British Museum over the Easter holidays, Richard? Or will it have gone by then?
No, it's on till the 23rd of June. So it's, well, what it has is there's a cartoon rat, as it were, as though he joined, and the sort of experience he'd have in making camp. And
is his name Roland? It's an old joke, Richard. Is his name Roland?
I don't think he has a particular name, other than the fact that it's
Ratty, perhaps?
It's a very good way for children to follow how someone acted as a Roman soldier and was part, as I say, of a war machine, which was the most fearsome in the world at that time.
And obviously had a lot of rats in there. Fia, is it one for you, or is it a case of, well, yes, a rat in the Roman legions, it's got to be a winner in a museum?
This just reminds me that I'm not there and I just really want to visit you, so... Yeah.
Soon. It'll happen soon, I'm
soon.
Sure.
It will happen soon. And then I will just make a quick stop in London, visit the British Museum, and then be on my way to Lincoln.
There you go. Natasha, one for you, or is it a case of it's the Romans? What have they ever done for us?
Asterix and Obelix sorted them out, didn't they? look, I love a good bit of history. I love going to museums. So if I was able to get there within a time that wasn't like 24 hours, I probably would come and visit. On a slight side note, favorite Roman historical movie. Well, it's not particularly historically accurate, but I love Centurion. That's my favorite role of Michael Fassbender ever. Just as a shout out. Yeah, I'm sure Richard will probably hate it. He hates Troy.
I'm probably not in the same class as Alexander with
my goodness. Why? I'm talking about absolutely terrible movies. Alexander is one of the worst ever made.
It just needed a few more rats in Alexander, that's all.
If rats not got at the various whatever you call them.
Anna, you have the final words today. Will you be going to see the British Museum's exhibition about the Roman Empire, or is it a case of, look, Romania, the name is obviously connected, clearly?
As soon as I come back from Romania, I will go there instead.
There we are. And to Natasha Wanton, to Richard Fitzwilliams, Anna Coscanell, and Fia van den Bogart, huge thanks, and keep watching those movies, with or without the popcorn.